KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.
Hey, I'm Josh Barrow, your new host of Left, Right, and Center. Every week, join Rich Lowry, Bob Scheer, and me for a contentious yet civilized debate of the week's big political stories, from ISIS to the U.S. economy to this 47-candidate presidential election we're having. You can find Left, Right, and Center on KCRW's iTunes page.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. One of the thrills I had in doing this show for going on 20 years now is that we get to get people every once in a while who I idolize, and this gentleman who's sitting across from me has done the show a couple of times before. He's here for his newest film. The film, of course, is She's Funny That Way, and the writer-director is Peter Bogdanovich. Peter, thanks so much for coming.
Oh, thanks for having me, Elvis. It's good to see you again.
Good to see you, too. And this is the obligatory you get to tell the audience what the movie's about part.
Oh, well. It's a screwball comedy, pretty much. I mean, nobody seems to know what that word means anymore, but I'm not sure I know what it means anymore, but it's a wild comedy anyway, about a lot of coincidences, a lot of crossed signals, and a lot of embarrassment. And
about a young woman played by Imogen Poots who has her life changed by, well, how best to put this, a benefactor played by Owen Wilson. And things, one of the things that's so much fun about this movie is things change constantly. I mean, it's a bewildering blur of changes of circumstance. And it makes me wonder what that was like in the writing for the movie.
Well, Louise Stratton and I wrote it together at a time we were having some difficulties, not so much in our marriage, but though the marriage ended a couple of years later, but we're very close friends. We were very close at the time, but we were having some financial problems, and we had just moved to New York, and things were not easy, and we said to each other, let's write a comedy to cheer ourselves up. And we spent about a year writing it.
It's interesting because it feels very much like something that comes out of New York. There are certain stresses, and New York kind of has this heartbeat of its own anyway. And also, it's a city where you walk out the door and any number of things can happen, which is what the movie's basically about, isn't it?
Yeah, anything can happen in New York, that's for sure. She's an escort. He's married. But he comes to New York to direct a play, Owen Wilson does. And he orders an escort, and she comes up, and he likes her, and they go on a very sort of romantic date. He takes her for a meal, and then he takes her for a horse and buggy ride in Central Park. And then they make love, and then he offers her $30,000 if she promises never to stop being an escort, basically. And because she told him what she really wants to do is be an actress. He doesn't tell her he's a director, and he doesn't tell her he's going to direct a play. He tells her he's leaving the next day.
He doesn't even tell her his real name.
No, he gives a fake name. And, of course, as luck would have it, she comes to audition for his play, not knowing that he's the director because of a fake name and so on. And he almost falls down when he sees her. And anyway, that's the setup.
We should talk about this incredible cast, though. You've got Owen Wilson, you've got Catherine Hahn, you've got Rhys Ifans, you've got Will Forte, you've got Debbie Mazar, you've got Jennifer Aniston, you've got Austin Pendleton, who, for those of us who know your work, it was a thrill to see Austin Pendleton in one of your films again.
Yeah, it was fun to work with Austin again. He's brilliant.
Talk about putting this cast together. I mean, just the women alone in this movie.
Well, Jennifer Aniston, we offered her the role of the wife once we had Owen. Owen and I got to be very friendly. I met him through Wes Anderson, with whom I was friendly, and then got to like Owen. And
Wes and Noah Baumbach are the producers of this film.
They're the two of the executive producers, yeah. They helped to get the money together just by putting their names on it.
Mm-hmm.
I got to know Owen, and eventually he agreed to do the picture, and then since Jennifer Aniston had played his wife in Marley and Me, I thought we'd try and have, I thought that was kind of charming. I thought, let's try and see if she'll do it. She said, I like the script, but I want to play the therapist, which is a supporting part, but is quite the funniest part always was considered the funniest part in the script. So she was not wrong in terms of laughs, and she's brilliant in it. People say they've never seen her as funny, and she's it's unlike anything she's done, really. She plays the therapist from hell.
Yeah, so the least likely person ever to be a therapist.
Yes.
At one point in the therapy session, she calls somebody insane.
Yes. Yes, she's very mean. And so then Jennifer actually suggested Catherine Hahn, who's a close friend of hers, to play the wife. And I met her and loved her. Thought she'd be great. She's a wonderful actress. And Imogen Poots, who's British, I saw four or five women for that role of the escort. And I don't know what happened, but I asked to meet her, and she flew up from Atlanta where she was doing a picture, and I met her in New York at the Palm Court at the Plaza Hotel, the only place at the Plaza that hasn't been destroyed, I think. But anyway, she came and sat down, and we talked, and I tell you the truth, Elvis, 15 minutes after she sat down, I knew she was the girl. I never auditioned her or nothing. I just knew she'd be right. She had a kind of quirky quality, an eccentric quality, but she wasn't trying to be quirky or eccentric. She just was naturally that way. So I thought with the character the way it is and with her own persona being a bit off the wall, that it would make an interesting character. So I said, don't tell anybody, but you got the part. And she didn't tell anybody. I told everybody, and that was that. Everybody said, are you sure? Did you read her? I said, no, she's fine. She'd be great.
But she had never really done anything like this before either, because there's a kind of a pixelated quality to that character that reminds me so much of Carol Lombard in My Man Godfrey, or in any number of pictures, 20th century. I mean, was that kind of an archetype you had in mind for it?
Well, Carol Lombard is kind of the poster girl for screwball comedy. I think the phrase screwball comedy came as a result of a performance that she gave in My Man Godfrey, when I think in Variety said it's a real screwball performance or something like that, and that's where the phrase came from.
Well, this character definitely reminds me so much. I mean, just that way that she could get lost in the middle of a conversation, and the way those things really kind of were emotional moments too, as much as comedy. And Imogen just seems kind of perfect for that. And that was a quality you saw in her.
I just saw that, first of all, she's British. And the English can act circles around anybody. They're just brilliant. They're trained well. They have a tradition of acting. They're just brilliant. So I knew that wasn't going to be a problem, having her play a Brooklyn girl, because, as I say, they can do anything. And I had a feeling that she could be very good at comedy because she was light and had an amusing quality to herself. And I just had no doubts.
But I guess one of the things I'm thinking, too, about this movie, and that you, when you bring up screwball comedy, those are movies that are really dialogue intensive. I mean, there's a lot of dialogue going on, but the dialogue isn't just set up punchline. You've got to deliver character pretty fast.
Oh, yeah, right, exactly. That has to happen very swiftly, yeah.
Is that one of the things you love about screwball comedy, that so often the comedy comes from character rather than just jokes and setups?
Oh, yeah. That is what interests me. It's not just the character. It's the circumstances of what happens to these people and the messes that they get themselves into and the coincidences that occur regularly. I like all that. And it is a character-based thing because it's all character-based. I've always liked that kind of picture. And the first one I made was What's Up, Doc. I also like a lot of characters in the picture. I learned that on Targets, my first picture. By necessity, I had to tell two stories because I had the leading actor, Boris Karloff, for only 5 days, originally 2 days, and then I got Roger Corman to give me an extra 3 days. And so I had to have two stories. And I found in making the picture that it was very interesting in the cutting because if I got into a situation that I wanted to get out of with one story, I could always go to the other story. So when we came to picture show, I thought, I've got 10 stories here, even better, because I got the mother and the kids and all that thing. So it makes it interesting because you can keep going to other people. So you don't have to stick with one story, you know. And I like that. I like the freedom that gives you, and I like being able to jump around like that. It's tricky because you've got to do it in such a way that the audience doesn't feel yanked around and confused and all that. So they referred to picture show as classic American filmmaking, which maybe it was, but I was certainly thinking about that because I wanted to be very clear as to where we were at all times because it was a lot of characters.
It's the truth. My guest who's talking about the benefits of attention deficit disorder is Peter Bogdanovich. His new film as director is She's Funny That Way. I guess I think about that is you make it sound a lot easier by just talking about moving around from one thing to another, but there's got to be balance in this, and you can't depart too much from really the core of the story or else you'll do that thing you're talking about and confuse audiences. But there is, and I guess the reason I bring up Carol Lombard, who, as you say, was the exemplar of this kind of film, is that there's a quality of almost when these things are really working well that there's not enough oxygen in the room for everybody.
That's funny. That's true. You know, the great French bedroom farce writer, Georges Feydeau,
sure.
I think he wrote 29 hit comedies and then went crazy. But they're so complicated, you know. Talk about complicated plots. His are labyrinthian. And he had a rule that he kind of followed, which was the one person who must not come into the room must come into the room. And that sort of informs the way we did it a lot of the time, you know.
That's Feydeau, but also it could be Hitchcock. I mean, you're talking about the same thing in the end, aren't you? Tension works in any situation,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, sure. Suspense works in any situation, comedy or drama, yeah.
And then, well, this is one of the things I've always wanted to ask you about since you bring up Feydeau. There's often a character who takes up more space than anybody else in your movies, that person who just is almost all elbows walking into a room and can't help but stir up damage. And there's so many of these films that you've done with these characters who just basically you can't help but look at them whether you want to or not when they walk into a room.
Well, that's interesting, Elvis. I had never thought of it that way, actually, but that's why I like to talk to you. You enlighten me about my own work.
Is that one of the things you liked about the book, The Last Picture Show, is that it had those kind of things?
The Last Picture Show was a book that two people gave it to me to read, said that they think I might like to make a movie out of it. Sal Mineo and an English producer. And I didn't read it. I gave it to my wife at the time, Polly Platt, and I said, would you read this and tell me what you think? She read it, and she said, well, she said, it's a really good book, but I have no idea how you can make it into a picture. I don't know. I think it was the challenge of figuring out how to do this, which intrigued me.
And by telling that story, really, you tell that story by concentrating on the characters rather than narrative, strictly speaking.
Exactly, because it's the characters, you know. It was Thomas Hardy that said, character is plot. And that's the answer to that. Thank you, Thomas Hardy. Also, I was very careful to introduce each of the characters in a particular way so that you'd remember them. Their entrance is memorable. And you say, oh, that must be somebody important. Ellen Burstyn drives into a close-up. Jeff Bridges jumps off a truck and has a separate shot for that, and so on. And that was that's very important when you're doing a character piece like that with so many characters, is to give them an introduction, give them an entrance, you know.
And that's something really, again, which to me feels like almost something you see on the stage, the idea of giving somebody an entrance.
Well, it's true in movies, too.
No, you're right, but we'll take a break and talk more about this because so much to get into. My guest is who just put a flea in my ear is Peter Bogdanovich. His new film is director is She's Funny That Way. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Have you checked out the KCRW iPad app? It's called The Music Mine. Stream music handpicked by our DJs, watch live performances, and find new music. See why iTunes calls it an essential app for music discovery. Download and learn more at kcrw.com/musicmine.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment. Of course, I'm excited. My guest is Peter Bogdanovich. His new film is director. She's Funny That Way. We're talking about entrances, though, and movies. And by the time you made the last picture show, that had kind of disappeared, that idea of giving characters an entrance. The movies are taking on more of the feel of the Nouvelle Vague, which wasn't about that kind of thing. It was about using the camera as a different kind of observer. And I don't want to use the phrase classic Hollywood, but the idea of giving actors a chance to walk into a room and take a breath and inhabit the space in front of the camera was something that hadn't been done for a while before you did the last picture show.
Well, you know, I grew up with classic Hollywood filmmaking, and that's the only studying I ever did of movies was seeing a lot of good movies by a lot of good directors. And whatever I learned was sort of through osmosis. I don't remember. I'm not a very academic kind of guy.
But you do make, well, we've had this discussion before, and those who know my guest as both a filmmaker and a film scholar know that he kept a pretty voluminous set of index cards in which he wrote down the films.
Of every film I saw. That's true. You'd think that that would make me academic. But I did keep a card file of about 5,000 cards. I still have them.
Do you?
Oh, sure.
My gosh. When are you going to publish those?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I stopped in 1971. I went through, 70. 70 was the last year I kept track of it.
So. Why 90? Because you got so busy you didn't have time to do
it. I made last picture show and I figured, okay, that's enough studying. I'm not going to study this anymore.
But that osmosis you were talking about happened because there was the sort of classicism of the way you structure it. And there's a classical element and often the way you structure movies, but you give us the excitement of seeing the actors come in, which is...
Well, you know, if they're important characters, you want to give them an entrance. I think it's important. Maybe it is a theatric device that I learned from my years in the theater. But, you know, Shalyapin, the great Russian singer, one of his, Stella Adler, say he made a great entrance in Boris Godunov, the opera. He walked in backwards. That's a pretty good entrance. I've never stolen that yet. I may have to.
I think I've read that something that didn't Olivier do something similar to that in the Entertainer? Doesn't he come on stage backwards or doing a flip or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, there's something that he does that sort of thing as well.
Yeah, well, he was very influenced, I would think, by anybody who was theatrical.
Sure, sure. One of the things I find, and I think that She's Funny That Way really fits into this for me, is that you've been pretty, and I don't know how conscious a gesture this is of you, but women have always inhabited such an important part in the movies that you've done, and there's certainly a big part about this too, and also the kind of power that women have, social power, sexual power. That's something that you continually made a part of the films that you've done.
Well, yes, it's true, you know, and it was pointed out to me a couple of times, and I hadn't really thought of it that way, but I like women. And I think they're interesting, and they stir up the place. And my films have become more female-centric, actually, of late.
But I don't know that that's true, because I think about Paper Moon or
Paper Moon was funny, because Ms. Magazine, when Paper Moon was playing in 1973, said that at the end of the year, they said the only really great female character in the entire year was 9-year-old Tatum O'Neill in Paper Moon. It was a great character.
Who has a lot of power in that.
A lot of power, yeah.
But so I don't think somebody making that kind of point of reference isn't really paying attention to your career in Toto, because I think it's something you've always done.
I guess I'm attracted to that. I like women, and I think the lack of equality between men and women on paper, officially, so to speak, is something that is repugnant to me. And particularly since women tend to be dominant in relationships, because women are so smart so much of the time, and they're intuitive. And men make fun of, you know, women's intuition, but women's intuition is pretty goddamn powerful and accurate. I notice it in my life with whoever I'm with. They're always right in a funny way.
How far back does that go for you? I mean, does it go to your relationship?
My mother, I guess.
Okay, sure, okay.
My mother was a very strong woman. She went through a lot of difficult times. And she was very strong, and she helped my father a lot, and he was the strong, silent type, but she was quite vocal. And I guess my mother had a tremendous impact on me. I loved her dearly.
No, I think it's important to the way you think as a creative person, as an artist.
I certainly thought she was an equal of my father, even though my father was the artist. He was the painter, and he was the central figure in our home. But my mother seemed to be the heart of it.
Well, we're talking about women with Peter Bogdanovich, whose new film is Filmmaker. She's funny that way. It's the treatment. But that idea of the way women, especially in a period like the Last Picture Show, when there wasn't the kind of quote-unquote equality that there is now, women had to sort of find their power in very different ways. And you use that as a way to deal with that. And the women seizing power in ways that are outside of social norms is something that runs through your work as well.
Well, I think that's true. I wasn't so conscious of it, but I became more conscious of it after Dorothy Stratton was murdered in 1980, after we made They All Laughed, which again is a movie in which the women sort of take over in the third act. They've been manipulated, and then they manipulate everything in the third act. I wasn't aware that I was doing that. I wasn't saying, okay, the women are going to do this. It just seemed natural to me that it would work that way, you know?
Is it partially, too, because women have always occupied a part in your life as kind of partners? When you think about Dorothy or Sybil Shepherd or Polly, I mean, that's a big part of you, the way you work, isn't it?
Yes. I'm inspired by women. You know, it's not a coincidence that they're called the muses.
In this movie, yes, absolutely.
And she calls herself a muse in this film.
And it seems kind of highfalutin until we realize there's some truth to it, that she's not just...
There's truth to it, you know. There's a scene in She's Funny That Way where they go to the cloisters in New York, and where there are some 15th or 14th century, or 16th century, I don't remember now, tapestries of unicorns, the hunt of the unicorn, which I didn't realize what the unicorn was until after Dorothy was killed, because we had a thing about the unicorn between us. And she had asked me what a unicorn was. Was it a real animal? What was it? And I wasn't able to answer that while she was alive. And then after she was killed, I sort of became a kind of mission for me to really get that answer. And I found it finally in a book by Robert Graves, who was by far the greatest writer of the 20th century, in my humble opinion, or not so humble opinion. and he was a great historian, as you know, and not only a great novelist, but his credo was he wanted to get it right. So, of course, he answered with the question, what is the unicorn? The unicorn actually was not an azoological animal. It wasn't real. But it was a composite of five different animals, each of the five animals representing a different season of the year. And the overall unicorn, therefore, was what's known as a calendar beast in ancient times. This is like 2500 BC. And it represented the calendar year of a particular calendar that was matriarchal, because the first calendar system actually was matriarchal, because women needed a calendar, men didn't. Women needed it for the same reason they still needed, is because of the
menstrual cycle.
Exactly. Which they noticed was coordinated with the moon. So that's what the unicorn was. So the unicorn, in a way, represent, as they say in the movie, you know, stood for women. So there's a line in there where he says, you know, prostitution or being a prostitute was once was a sacred profession. She says, yeah, when was that? And he says, before spirituality and sexuality were split apart. They really shouldn't be, you know. And she says, you're a very romantic guy and so on. But that is, in fact, a very important point.
It is, as is that schism that happens, the other thing it's hard to not note in your movies, the schism between the romantic and the cynic.
Yeah.
Those two poles, opposite poles end up attracting.
Yeah, it's true. It's very true. I don't know how to explain that, but it's true. I'm more of a romantic than a cynic, I'm afraid.
Do you like writing cynics, though?
Well, there's so many of them around. I'm not a cynic at all. My mother used to say she didn't like cynics, and I can see why.
You know that old truism, I think, forget if it's Balzac or whoever, said inside every cynic beats the heart of a true romantic.
It could be.
Yeah, and so often the cynics are proven to be romantics in your work as
right,
well, because they do want to be rescued from being cynics.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
I just find myself thinking about this, because we've talked about this any number of times, I don't know if you remember, but one of my favorite films is your Texasville, which really is, for me, that sort of intersection of Lubitsch and Hawks, but also so much of you as well. And it just goes to show that that thing for me that exists in so much stuff, that you, if you tilt anything 10 degrees, what could be dramatic becomes comedic. And it's also with the gathering of wisdom and age, all those things that seemed so sort of heartbreaking in the last picture show are the stuff of kind of ribald comedy in Texasville, aren't they?
Well, you know, young teenage romance is kind of heartbreaking. But when you get to be 40, it's not so sad anymore. It's getting a little funny. And that's the book was written that way, too. Larry wrote, McMurtry wrote the book that way. Unfortunately, the version that's available of Texasville is not my cut. I mean, it's not recut. It's just missing 25 minutes. And I'm hoping to get the long version of out there eventually.
And also, getting back to what I'm saying about she's funny that way, you need that sense of balance, don't you?
Well, yes, it's very important. You know, I like to get comedy into everything. I mean, I even got comedy into Daisy Miller, which was a serious picture. But I think it's, I love to have people laugh, and I think it's important to, in a drama, to have some comedy as well.
For me, again, that thing, these all these contrasts that we're talking about, or rather all these ideas we're talking about, the idea of women finding the power that they have to find, the idea that the cynic has to do war with the romantic, but there's always a romantic ideal in the way these films work. I guess as kind of a last question, because it's something I would bet people study films that wonder, because you said that none of this is conscious, but so when you sit down to write, is it about writing character first, or do you suss out where the plot's going to go and then you film the characters in?
We work on the plot first, I think.
Yeah.
But we know that we have to get a sense of who the characters are before we can really start. Who are these people? Who are we dealing with? But then we work out the plot, the mechanics of the plot, which are led, we are led to by the characters, actually. To be honest with you, I never have figured out how I've written a script when it's an original. Just to have one idea, like They All Laughed was an original script, and all I had to start with was the idea of a detective agency in which the detectives fall in love with the people they're supposed to be following. That was the idea. And that's how that started. And I thought, well, maybe that's not a bad idea. And this friend of mine said, it's a good idea. Why don't you pursue it? And I thought, okay, well, to see how we can do that. And that's how that evolved.
And as you in that continuum, because I always thought that, not always, because this is only recent, but seeing the movie, that the George Mofokin character could be almost Ben Gazzara grown up from They All Laughed.
Could be.
With Will Forte playing his son now.
Could be, yeah, you could say that.
Because the idea of the private detective who still believes in love,
yes.
This idea still exists from They All Laughed to like almost 35 years later here. And She's Funny That Way.
Yeah, well, I'm still the same guy, I guess.
Well, I'm glad you're still here. We're out of time, Peter. Thank you so much for doing this.
Elvis, thank you so much. You're so perceptive.
No, just appreciative. It's very different. My guest is Peter Bogdanovich, whose newest film as director is She's Funny That Way. The show is recorded and mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by our associate producer, Blake Veit. I'm happy to be here. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Searchlight Pictures, presenting the new movie, The Greatest Hits. Music takes us places. What if it could literally take you back in time? The Greatest Hits is a hypnotic journey through the connection between love, music, and memory. Now streaming on Hulu.